Okay, thank you very much. I would first like to thank the organizers giving me the opportunity to talk at this conference. I should say from the very beginning that this talk will be only remotely connected to quantum biology, but I hope it will still be interesting to some of you. I have recently become fascinated by the problem of learning and behavior, and this is in fact also the topic of this talk. It's clearly a prominent topic in biology, but I would like to look at it from the perspective of computation and simulation. And as you all know, the ultimate power of computation and simulation, quantum physics has a lot to say about this. So the question is really whether quantum physics and the concepts of quantum information also can say something fundamental about learning and behavior from a computational perspective. In different words, you could also regard this as a problem of artificial intelligence and machine-generated behavior. And in this sense, I'm exploring quantum concepts for artificial intelligence. So the plan of the talk is the following. I will first say something about the notion of agents versus the notion of computers. Then I will discuss different possibilities of quantizing agents. Then I will introduce recent work of myself and my group on this topic called projective simulation for learning. I will discuss quantum generalization of this proposal, and if time permits in the end, I will discuss the question to what extent machines can be creative and thereby come back to the topic of biology. Now, a modern platform to discuss concepts of artificial intelligence is the framework of so-called artificial agents or intelligent agents. An agent is always some entity put in some environment by which it can receive perceptual input, so-called, through some sensory apparatus, and on which it can act through some actuators and thereby possibly change the environment. In addition, there is some kind of internal processing that processes a sensory input and allows the agent, so to say, to decide what to do next. So there are many types of different agents existing. And the nature of the agent is determined by the agent program. There are very simple agents, like called reflex type agents, like these vacuum cleaners that move around and when they hit the floor, they go back and so on. There are more sophisticated agents, model-based agents, for example, that have inside a kind of a chip where there is some information about their environment that can help them, for example, to explore this environment. I will mainly be talking about learning agents, specifically reinforcement learning agents. But this is the general framework. There are many applications for agents known. So they're ranging from traffic control to the control of remote space shuttles. And the internet is a platform for artificial net robots. In general, so material realizations of agents are, of course, robots. And there's also the idea around of nano robots that will, in the future, somehow help us to, you know, control our medical activity in the body and help us, you know, in a medical sense. But last but not least, agents, artificial agents, can also be regarded as interesting models for biological real agents to study what behavior can be generated under such agents. You may have a good, you can try to model biological scenarios. Now, I should say that in recent research, there, as far as I understand it, there's a lot of emphasis on embodied aspects in agents. So they call it embodied approaches to artificial intelligence. And the emphasis there is that an agent should be really distinguished from the mere concept of a computer. Yeah? For to define intelligence in their setting, it is very the interaction with the environment and the way the agent program, so to speak, changes under this interaction is an essential point of agent research. And they call it embodied. An agent always has to be embodied and situated in an environmental context. It is a little bit reminiscent of, you know, of the emphasis that quantum information put when this field started. Saying, you know, information is not an abstract concept, it's physical. Information is physical in the sense these robot people say artificial intelligence must be embodied, I would say physical. So, and I want to discuss the scheme in a similar context. So I feel sympathetic with this approach and I want to follow this. Okay, so having explained this, the question is now, how would you possibly quantify agents if you want, yeah? And why? There are, in fact, several possibilities which you see already from the very setup of the scheme. And I will describe two of them which I consider particularly relevant. So the first possibility would be that you say, well, let this be a really classical device as people have developed and we may develop, and let the environment be the quantum system. Then the environment could be considered a quantum state, and the actions of the agent could be measurements or unitaries done on the environment, and the percepts are the measurement results that come back. Okay. This clearly is the framework of many protocols we know in quantum information theory. One of them is the one-way quantum computation, where in fact you drive a quantum computation by continuously measuring on a state, getting a result, doing a new measurement in an adaptive sense. Also, quantum error correction fits to that scheme and others. However, these schemes are in the language of agent theory very simple agents. They would be called reflex agents because everything is predetermined or what you have to do when you get a certain signal. But you may well imagine more complicated scenarios where these protocols operate in partially unknown environments. For example, imagine that once you have prepared a cluster state, there are some background dynamics going on which you didn't know a priori and which, you know, may be time varying. Now you can run these protocols like one-way quantum computation in a fault-tolerant manner, thereby doing permanently quantum error correction, projecting the cluster state back to the code space. But if you knew that in fact there were just some additional, say, magnetic stray fields, and you would find it out, you would then realize that in fact the only thing you have to do is to adapt the basis, and you wouldn't need to do a quantum error correction at all. There are much cheaper solutions. The question is, can the agent somehow find out on the fly by measuring and finding some inconsistencies in the correlations? So there are interesting schemes how really you can put real learning in these protocols that we have already, I have started to explore with a number of colleagues here at this workshop. But this is not what I'm going to talk about now. What I want to talk about now is a second example where you leave the environment classical, but really the program inside is quantum. Yeah? So the environment would be classical, the program would be quantum, and clearly then there have to be interfaces. The sensor and actuators are quantum classical interfaces. This is then really the vision, so to say, of robots, you know, like things that exist, and their possible enhancement if they had the capability of processing their information in a quantum sense. Yeah? So this is the topic of quantum enhanced agents, and what we are interested in is the impact of such scenarios on their behavior, on their flexibility, and their learning capability. In fact, you know, the previous topic that was on the program, namely avian magnetoreception, you could, in a very, very simple sense, already regard as a quantum enhanced agent in the sense that, you know, if this basic hypothesis is correct, there is in fact some quantum processes, photo-induced processes in the retina of the bird that help the bird to navigate. It's a very simple thing, but there's a little element already in there, but we want to really to study it in a broader sense now. Okay, and before I start, let me just also point out problems with all of this. Why isn't there an established theory of quantum artificial intelligence to begin with? The problem is that there is no universal model in all of these agents. Different from computation, you don't have a Turing machine. Therefore, different applications, there are different solutions, different agent models. And more generally, the question is, it's not clear what you would put in a universal sense to put in the box. You know, what would you like to quantize? Is it a Turing machine inside here? Is a quantum agent nothing but a robot with a little quantum computer inside? Would you put a neural network in there and quantize it? So what do you do here? I claim that there's no well-established theory or even an integrated view on agents in that sense. And that is the reason why you have to come up with the right approach and finding even a right classical setup, which you then quantize. Now, in this talk, I want to propose a learning type agent on a protocol which I call projective simulation. Now, I have to say something about this because you should not confuse it with the omnipresent concept of quantum simulators, although there is a connection, but it's a different thing. So the concept will exploit simulation, as we understand it now in our community, as a fundamental physical concept in the context of learning. Yeah. And I do claim, so this will be largely classical what I'm talking about, but I do claim, and it will show so at the end of the talk, that the proposal also provides a natural basis for quantization, giving rise to the protocol of quantum projective simulation. So different from, you know, the main topic of quantum simulation, I will really be talking about a self-simulating machine. The simulation will be applied to the agent world itself rather than to simulating some other system. Okay. Now, this is recent work with Gemma de las Cuevas, who has recently moved to Ignacio Sirac in Garching, and it also contains here some unpublished work with collaborators at Innsbruck. The basic ingredient of this proposal, there are two concepts here. One is the concept of projective simulation, and the other one is a notion of episodic and compositional memory. Please to note, for the next few slides, this is all classical. So let me first describe the general ideas before I apply to specific realizations. So the basic memory architecture is a stochastic network of clips. Clips are units of episodic memory. Now, what is episodic memory? Episodic memory is something that is known from psychology. It is, you know, things you remember from your like scenes from your past, like when what happened when you went last time to the dentist, what happened when you met a person the first time, and so things you really have an extended spatial-temporal memory about. But here, the clips, I will consider them more in a fragmentary sense. These are fragments of episodes like in, say, let me give a different example. In the traffic context, an episode could be a ball rolling on the street, stop. A child running after the ball. A mother shouting, stop, the brakes going. Yeah? So little fragments, which in a machine would be connected and correlations being established in between. What I'm going to talk about is even simpler because it will be, you would rather talk about basic physical events that and the correlations between them. That will be the idea behind this clip network. So a call of memory would then really establish a random walk through, a call of memory would be a random walk through a clip network, okay? Now, the simplest version of this scheme is that at some point you get perceptual input, the machine, which excites some of these memory constants called a percept clip, which will then trigger a random walk through clip space until it couples out again. If you would like, it's in the memory, it's a patchwork-like replay of experience, but randomly reassembled, yeah? Virtually because it only happens in the memory. Action is at some point induced by screening the clips for specific features. So if a certain feature is detected, it triggers motor action. When this is done, there will be a reward. And if this action was the right one following this percept, if it's a rewarded action, that will lead to an update of these transition probabilities in the stochastic network. And in a more refined level, it will also lead to an update of certain additional degrees of freedom, which I call emotion tags that are associated to transitions, which I will talk later on. An important point is, and there are some concepts in artificial intelligence that have a loose relation to clips, which I might discuss later. Refinement of the scheme, which is important, is what I call compositional memory. So as part of the simulation, which is the stochastic random walk through this network, new clips may be created that were not actually perceived before. So, and this will be done either by random variation of clips or by composition. So in this example, a new clip, clip number 5, can be created from two similar clips, and this can induce, actuator movement. So the point is that fictitious clips that the memory stochastically creates itself may in fact lead to factual action. Now, if this action is rewarded, then these fictitious clips, which didn't really happen, but just they were kind of simulated or generated randomly by the agent, will become an integral part of this memory. These connections will be enhanced, and in future, they will be part of the memory content of the episodic memory of the agent and will determine future actions. So this is the thing that really comes from the agent itself, and this will then allow to generate new behavioral patterns, and this is what we are studying. Now, I will not spend very much time in formalizing all of this, I will rather go to specific examples to get the general idea across. What I should emphasize, however, that there are two layers of description. There's a really an external one, where you know where the agent is confronted with a certain sensory input, and the question is, what is the conditional probability that it does action A when presented sensory input S? Now, this, if the agent learns to do the correct thing, then it will have a strict correlation. And then there's the internal level of the description. These are the stochastic processes of the hopping in this clip network, and then there are input and output couple of functions. Let me before I get lost into this mathematics, let me give you a specific illustration of this. It's a simple game where I can illustrate the basic concepts. We call it invasion game. So this is, consider an agent D. Unfortunately, I called it D and A. So D is the agent, which is a defender, that has to defend several doors against an attacker that comes from above, like in these computer games. The game starts with an invader facing the agent at one door. And then the rule is that the invader at some point disappears, and it will reappear at some other door. And the defender has to block it. It has to guess where it will go. Will it go to the left or to the right? Of course, in order to do that, it will get the clue. So before it moves, the attacker will show a sign. And then the defender really has to find that, this sign means that it will go this way or the other way. Whatever, it a priori doesn't have a meaning. So it will have to learn what these symbols mean. And that is then the game. So what you see here is a simple clip network that corresponds to this environmental scenario. There are two input clips, like the sign showing left or right. And there are two actuator clips. I will move to the left. I will move to the right. And then there are edges between these clips. They denote unnormalized hopping probabilities after an excitation. And when the agent learns, and some of these lines get thicker and other of these lines stay very thin, and the thickness of these lines are on these unnormalized probabilities are denoted by these values h in cycle n, h of s and a, connecting really, these are edges in the graph. And then there is the transition probabilities are then the normalized versions of these h values. And then you can define learning rules. We studied here a specific one, which I want to share with you. There are other ones too. But the learning rule here is maps the h values at one time step n to an h value of time step n plus one. And the main thing is perhaps to say that they are a little bit reminiscent of master equations that you use in laser physics, where there's a loss term that describes the forgetting of the agent. So there's dissipation. If the agent is not permanently stimulated, it will forget things. And there's a gain term, lambda g, which is the reward function, that will somehow increase these edges. And all the complicated thing, these are not Markovian master equations, the complicated thing is inside this reward function, which will depend on previous experience the agent has made. In any case, you can program this numerically with some approximations. You can even give linear approximations, which I'm going to share with you. So this is what will happen in the simplest version of the game. Here you will see this is the time, the number. This is the blocking efficiency, so the efficiency with which the agent goes to the right door when being presented with a sign. And it is, so to say, the average success probability over different sensory inputs. And you see that the agent learns after a few time steps and finds some maximum blocking efficiency, depending on gamma, which is the forgetfulness. If the agent hardly forgets anything, if the fidelity of this efficiency or the efficiency becomes very high, if it forgets on the way, there will be some maximum below one. Now, at this point, for example, after 250 time steps, the attacker suddenly changed the rule of the games. When it showed this sign, it would move here and try to fool the agent. And this is then what happens here. You see when suddenly the meaning of these symbols is inverted, and the agent will relearn. However, the relearning will take some time if the dissipation was very low, yeah, that means the agent had very good memory, and therefore also it took a long time to forget about this because some needs bad memory. While if the agent had a higher degree of forgetfulness, it will learn quicker. Okay, this makes sense. What we then did is we made this scheme more sophisticated, more colors and other things which I will try to run through. So one simple modification would be, now this looks at this point similar to other models like perceptrons and so on, where you might wonder, why do you have this internal platform at all? Why don't you just connect, you know, input and output in a straightforward sense? Why do you introduce clips? Now the thing is that this defines a platform where you can define your own rules and use it as a simulation platform. For example, if you can introduce additional degrees of freedom, called this reward flags or emotion flags, which I've called them, that will do the following. They are degrees of freedom that remember the last reward that was on this transition. It's not the long-term memory is in the thickness of these lines, but there's one degree of freedom that remembers the last reward of that, and that is stored in here. So this, for example, says the last reward here was negative. And if it then happens that, you know, for example, the agent is presented with such an arrow and it randomly hops here, then this flag can be used as an inhibitory signal. Say, oh, watch out, this was last time it was rewarded, was not rewarded, don't do it. And since I don't want to have a complicated computation, I don't know what to compute, I just say, go back, do it again. And then I give it a chance for reflecting on the decision it's going to make. Yeah? So I can define a maximum number of reflections that the agent may do using the short-term flags. Thereby, I can boost, press the probability of making a wrong decision, and thereby really boost this learning efficiency a lot, in fact, exponentially. This relates, again, the internal probabilities hopping in the clip network, and this is now just the external percept action correlations. Okay, that's one thing that you can do, and then we studied a number of things. So we studied the scaling of this with the problem size. So if you have several colors, then you see that it has, in fact, a linear scaling, so that seems to be all right. The R is the number of reflections. You see that this gets better and better if you let the agent reflect more and more times. Here you see also specific learning curves for different percept and action sizes of the percept and action space. And this is just to indicate that, in fact, we have nice analytic results linearizing these master equations initially and in the asymptotic state, where you can then determine the initial slope, which is a rough measure for the learning time, and the stopped asymptotic efficiency from analytic consideration, which is contained in this paper. Now, there are other things that you can do. For example, you can also realize by a simple modification or extension of the rules a model of associative memory, where percept clips, you know, because corresponding now to cuts to arrows of different colors, may call each other with a certain probability depending on the Hamming distance. Yeah, you can define a distance of in percept space, and when percepts are very close with respect to distance, they have a certain probability of calling each other. Then you can realize a scenario where the agent, for example, is trained by presenting them red colors, red arrows to the left or to the right. This builds up a certain in the clip network a certain graph here that says, okay, if you see this, you likely do that. If you do see this, you likely do that. But suddenly the agent is represented with an arrow with a different color. So then it doesn't have to learn from scratch, but it can use connections within the percept clips so that it has a certain probability of jumping here, and then with certainty it will do the right thing. And what you see here are three snapshots how the clip network evolves under such an evolution, and showing that, in fact, you get an effect of a gain of through association in memory, which increases the learning time, but which may also increase the time the agent spends in simulating, yeah, because it can, in fact, almost get trapped in some of these loops until it makes a decision. Okay, and then another concept is really compositional memory. So something I mentioned before, though, in this architecture, the agent has, in principle, the possibility of creating new clips. So here is a very simple example. It's maybe not clear what message I want to make here. So this is a more generalized game, a two-dimensional game. We studied two, three, four-dimensional games where you know, the agent is first trained on simple actions like going to the left or going to the right, being presented by simple percepts. And then the idea is that the agent has in principle is able to do more complex things, which are composite motor actions, doing certain motors, switching them on at the same time, which is considered more complex than doing only one motor at a time. And the general rule is of compositional memory that in the clip network, you can create new clips in regions of clip transitions where there exists a high reward. So for example, here the rule of the game is, so this is like a two-dimensional invasion game where the attacker comes from the back, and you have to decide whether you go left, right, up, down, or some other place. But what is trained initially are just these simple transitions. At some point, the agent is presented with a new signal, meaning the attacker will come here. Now, it has never done this, so it will keep on switching either this or that motor. And in fact, it will be rewarded partially if it goes in the right quadrant. It will not be rewarded if it goes somewhere else. This, then, if a situation evolves where it gets the reward, strengthens transitions, but always stays in an ambivalent situation, then this, in our scheme, triggers a situation where it can, in its memory, create a composite actuator clip and then do it stochastically, which will then, in fact, it will be higher reward. And you can show that this, if you go to more complex, higher dimensional situations, this really speeds up the learning. Yeah, it's better rather than having all options which are typically combinatorically high in high dimensional spaces from the beginning. It's typical first to explore simple movements and then create new movement patterns in regions where the reward is increasing. Okay, then one thing where we think we can really, where this system is also very promising is that you can, that it offers itself for learning temporal correlations, which I think is something I just want to mention at this point. Because this is often a hard problem in reinforcement learning, and then maybe we can come back to this in the discussion session. But where now the reward associated with the transition is a variable that may be memorized over several cycles. So you can attach a certain status of these clips, which we call clip glow, for the corresponding edges between the clips. And when a certain transition was excited, then you can impose that this transition has a certain status that extends over several cycles. By this, you connect several cycles on the simulation platform, and thereby allow the agent to learn temporal correlations in the environment. There's a nice multi-ship game that I can illustrate here, but I think in view of the advanced time, I will not explore on this. So the summary of this classical part is we claim that the simulation provides a platform to play with previous experience before concrete action is taken. That's the entire idea, to have a separate platform where things are done. Now, there's rules of clip composition and variation, as described here, introduce a room for variation of the agent around established patterns of behavior. So it learns by doing what it did in the past, by being enforced and enhanced. So building up stronger and stronger edges in this graph, but also it varies these things, and this really provides a room to vary around these established patterns of behavior. And it's very importantly, it is really inside the agent itself. It's the agent itself in that sense that creates new options by internal random processes. So what it does is not entirely, not even in a stochastic sense, determined by what it has done in the past. It is also determined by the rules of clip composition and variation inside. That has some implications regarding, you know, the notion of creative machines, but I wanted to talk about this maybe at the end. Let me come to the problem of quantum projective simulation. Now, this is not as much developed, but I claim that this is different from other models that I have also looked at. I think there's a clear route to quantization here. And that is the following. The basic thing is that, okay, we will introduce a quantum memory instead of a classical memory. And the quantum memory will be a quantized notion of a clip network. The idea being that the classical random walk, yeah, that is really the driving mechanism behind all this, will be replaced by a quantum walk. And we do have notions of quantum walks that we know are beneficial in certain scenarios. The entire idea being that an agent, if this is successful, can explore its episodic memory in superposition, you know, the old game in quantum information, with a potentially huge gain in efficiency. Yeah. So it could, if this works, learn and in particular react to a given situation much faster, because in such behavioral scenarios, the agent is presented with a new situation, only has a short time to do something. Yeah. So if it can explore more efficiently all the episodic memory it has acquired, it may be advantageous. Yeah. And this then feeds back in several cycles also on the learning, and that is the question we are interested in. Now, time is running out, 1 minute, yeah. So the overall scheme is this, that you will have, as before, you have percepts being presented. These percepts will be translated into clip excitation states, which then induce a quantum walk in memory, which after some feature detection will couple out and do an action, which is again classical. Now, how would you implement this? Now, to model a quantum walk, I will here use a Hamiltonian representation, you know, that we have copied, for example, from this paper, where the coherent part of these hoppings is described by a Hamiltonian of that form, describing coherent transitions between different clips, Cj and Ck, in the network, and where the clips themselves correspond to excitations of the quantum memory, described by excitation and de-excitation operators. So a clip will become a quantum state, and that is when memory is activated, it goes into an excited state, and then the excitation propagates. And now, so the clips are then these excitations. And if you really want to describe it in a single excitation space, you will have expressions like this that you also study when you look, for example, at exciton propagation, photosynthesis, or whatnot. Now, the problem here is really that we need, because I want this model to have strictly be more powerful than the classical model, the classical stochastic process should be contained in that. So I need really a process of unidirectional walks. And that is a kind of a problem for quantum walks. You don't have, you know, how to generalize quantum walks that to walks that go into one direction. This you can do, and this we do by introducing Lindblad type terms that really describe unidirectional quantum jumps. And this, you know, with standard mathematical tools, you can then describe it like that, where a transition, for example, from clip one to clip number two, if it's incoherent, would be that you destroy the color blue and you create the color red, so to say. And then overall, the entire dynamics, that is the simulation in the clip network, would be described by a quantum Liouville equation, which allows for a mixture of directed walks, which are incoherent, and coherent and undirected walks, which are quantum and coherent inside the clip network. Now, this looks very simple, but when I refer to excitons in a photosynthetic process, but please to note that the composite structure of clips, when the problem becomes more complex, they have a composite structure, like a percept clip could be representing, you know, the shape, the color, motional degrees of freedom, and so on. These clip operators are multimode operators, so to say. Like here, a transition from one to two would really mean you destroy the blue color, you destroy the left arrow, you create the left arrow, a left symbol, you create a red color. Yeah. All these will be binary encodings, of course, when you operate. So you will really be facing, if you go to more complex and interesting scenarios, quantum many-body interactions. And it's not. But I have to observe that at least this part of this quantum projective simulation for learning agents can obviously be cast into a framework which is reminiscent to what we have seen in dissipation-driven quantum simulation of quantum many-body interactions. Yeah, these are master equations of that type and also quantum many-body terms that may be different, but maybe not way off, as it has been described by people given on this slide. And in fact, they are already proof of principle demonstrations or in ion traps like described here. So I think my time is running out. Before I forget, I would first like to introduce the team. So this is Gemma de las Cuevas, with whom I have started this work, who is now in Garching. This is Julian Mautner, Adi Makmal, Markus Thiersch, and Daniel Manzano. And perhaps I should conclude by making some general remarks on the entire thing. What is missing is still a proof that, you know, that coherent learning can really give you a gap, can be faster. Yeah? What I have shown to you, what I claim, is that the framework is very natural. So the projective simulation makes sense as a reinforcement learning scheme. It can be naturally quantized by going from random walks to quantum walks. But we have to use somehow the potential speed up that is in quantum walks in a learning scenario. Yeah? And which is the right agenda with a provable speed up, i.e. gap for coherent learning? The way we do it, one thing that we're doing is we embed specific graph structures that are known to be fast, you know, like walking through a hypercube or walking through randomly connected binary trees, and look where do they make sense, and this is also maybe a question to people working in artificial intelligence, where do such graphs potentially appear? Because this would be the candidates to be quantized giving a speed up. Now, as I mentioned, the projective simulation is really a model for self-simulation. We are not talking about one system simulating another system, but a system simulating itself, its own future, so to say, or behavioral options. And coming back at the very end to biology and learning, I claim that this could be used, or maybe, to design also behavior experiments on the basis of simple models. Yeah? So you could then even study questions like, you know, how free is an agent like a simple animal in choosing what to do next? Yeah, what are the options? Is it entirely determined by its neural wiring, or is there some freedom conceivable in its behavioral options? So I thank you with this for your patience.
Thank you for this nice talk. Are there any questions?
Yes.
Yeah, very nice talk. I just wanted to clarify a bit about what it meant to be fast. So, you know, of course, in quantum computing, we get most excited by exponential speedups. Now, so here I have two questions. One, it seems like with the quantum walk, we're looking at a quadratic speedup. And second, in order to understand it, I need to have a clear picture of problem or problem. So I'm guessing somehow this is going to be related to a computational problem. So. What is the problem size, and are you expecting quadratic speedup?
Well, I mean, we do know that in quantum walks, we can have more than quadratic speedups, if I might. You know, I mean, walking through a hypercube, there can be faster speedups, and the search is more, you know, can you really embed these known results from quantum walks and other things in this scenario? So one should say in general that, of course, learning seems to be generically slow. You know, if the problem sizes get bigger and bigger, learning seems to be a hard problem that is intrinsically slow for all models we know. And I'm happy with if we get only a quadratic speed up. I would even just to see, in fact, the difference of even the behavioral phenomenology, if there's a quantum process behind from a classical process, would be interesting in itself. So I don't want to make too many promises on how powerful this quantum agent would be and what it could do more. We don't know at this point. But I think we have a framework that offers something, you know, that offers a good use for the results that are known in quantum walks. As far as I'm concerned, the results on quantum walks, I've also always asked myself, what is the computational relevance for it? What algorithm can I solve with it? What is the use of walking exponentially fast through a hypercube or through a randomly connected tree? This would be a clear application.
I can make some comments on that. So if you have to include dissipative driving to make it work, then it's unlikely you're going to get any significant speed up asymptotically. And we showed in the excitonic case that you get a very short time speed up in these light harvesting systems, and then at long times everything's diffusive. So that's one data point.
Did you really apply it to walks on a hypercube?
not an hyper.
You know, the question is, what is? Can you really compare these scenarios? I referred to excitonic.
I think you can, and there are studies actually of decoherence on hypercube walks, and they do become typically in the long run. So there's literature out there. But let me make another comment. That there's a very nice formulation that might be useful for understanding or for mapping quantum warp behavior onto this, which is from Francesco Petruccioni, who has an open system, coined quantum warp analysis, which might be helpful.
I see.
And the other thing is, that have you thought about the timescale of speed up? I mean, even though you wouldn't necessarily have asymptotic speed up, you might have something useful if you have a short time speed up. Like, for instance, in your procedure for creating new memories, there would presumably be some kind of space and time local region in which this might be important, but it wouldn't necessarily be important for that it be quantum in the long time. So it might be that you need to look at sort of what's a short time scale rather than asymptotic.
Yeah. Okay, but you know, strict mathematical statements about scaling behaviors also in classical models of artificial intelligence. That is, these are problem instances where people present algorithms that feature well. The general insight, as I'm saying, there is no universal model that you can apply. So I don't see this as the major thing to focus on at this point. I mean, regarding the quantum coherence, maybe I would like to make one comment. I think it's important to realize that since this is not a really computational model of the of a quantum agent, like a scheme that has a full-blown quantum computer inside, with an algorithm that needs to and the quantum register that needs to be maintained coherent over a long time span, but rather it is just a coherent hopping through a network. It's not clear whether you need to traverse the entire network or whether it's sufficient to explore. This is what you were mentioning. Okay, sorry. Now, whilst answering, I understand the question. It may be sufficient to explore just part of it, and then even, very short time coherence may be helpful for that. And this matches well with some results we have in quantum biology that, in fact, where it's unlikely that in real biological situations you get large-scale coherence over, something like the brain. It may well be that you get, for a short time coherence be maintained and even entangled scenarios if you are in a non-equilibrium situation. So it's not clear whether this matches together. It's not the primary objective of that, but that is enough.
We have time just for a short last question.
So you mentioned there is a linear scaling with the dimension of the problem. So do you know what happens when you replace the classical walk with the quantum walk?
The classical?
What happens if you replace the memory to the quantum walk? Do you know what the scaling or how it changed? Or some speculation?
Well, do I want to make a speculation? No, I really don't.
Okay, maybe. Just getting back to the application in biology, the decoherence times are incredibly short, so all the sensory inputs are 10 femtosecond type decoherence. So how would you imagine? I mean, so the sensory inputs and any kind of actuator process, the coherence times are orders of magnitude shorter than the actual mesoscale coupling to the bath that leads to functions.
Yes, so I mean the sensory input that is considered classical. It will excite in the memory coherent processes, maybe short time coherence, and then couple out and it's classical again. So the only thing we are talking about is in a certain memory architecture. But I don't claim anything about biology there. The claim is that what I want to do is I want to build a quantum agent. And that may be useful to solve certain tasks, and I want to study where it is useful and how the phenomenology would be like. Yeah? People build robots. They build, either in a material sense, things moving around and reacting, but also software packages. And I think one could build quantum robots in that sense that certainly will show new behavioral phenomenology, and they, in some sense, would be faster, whether I can give a complexity clear complexity statement at this point. This wouldn't there. But it's really about a point. This is why it was called artificial agents. Yeah, I'm talking about quantum possibilities of artificial agents. And I've introduced the classical model, which I think is interesting in its own right. And this is on this transparency, but I think my time is over.
Yes, so let's thanks for the speaker again. Let's move on to the next speaker, and I give the session back to Mark.